Live from Bella Notte Restaurante in beautiful downtown. News Talk 970 WKHM, in conjunction with the Jackson Chamber of Commerce, are proud to bring you Good Morning Greater Jackson. And now, here's your hosts, Greg O'Connor and Rick Walton.
Beautiful day, right, Greg?
Lovely day in downtown Jackson.
Tell you. Well, it's we've had a great fall, though. We had an incredible fall. So we can accept this day today. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who we got on the show today?
It's a good question. Experience Jackson.
Okay.
The Rotary is here. It looks like the whole Rotary.
Yeah, standing room only. Rotarian breakfast today, apparently.
Thank you, Rotary, for coming out. JPS, Jackson Public Schools, United Way of Jackson County. Making a rare appearance on this show.
That's right. Well, JPS is back, too. Second time here. So, we are on, this is the second, you know, next month's our last show. Can you
no
believe
kidding.
It? Last show for the
this
year.
This year just flew.
Does time go by fast or what? My gosh, I tell you, we're so blessed, but it goes by so fast. So, we're going to start out here with Experience Jackson, and we've got Jennifer Cronkite and Jessica Webb here with us. And how
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning.
I wonder if people really know what that means, Experience Jackson. I mean, do you
know what it is?
Yeah. Do you think they know? I mean, I guess you could probably guess.
Yeah, we're the Jackson County Visitors Bureau.
You're the Jackson County Visitors Bureau, mm-hmm. And your new name is Experience Jackson?
Well, we've been Experience Jackson, but yes, okay. That's what we are.
Right. Well, I've been hearing about you on the radio all the time because, you know, you've been talking about how we won the award here for the photographer to
yes.
come down and take all the pictures. That was pretty exciting.
Yes. We're very, very excited about it. So we had Gene Yoon from Pure Michigan visit us the weekend of the 14th through the 16th, and he took photos of Jackson while he was here, and he went out and visited some of our assets, and he's writing a blog about it. So we were really excited that we had the opportunity to win that. So thank you, Jackson, for voting.
That was great. Now, did you go around with them to where they took the pictures at?
He sent us a slew of pictures. I know that he went to the Falling Waters Trail in Lime Lake and got some beautiful shots of that. So we are in the process of getting all those photos right now.
Well, that's cool. That's
how was the weather?
So unfortunately, you know, it was rainy that weekend, but he made it look fabulous. So,
okay. So tell us, what's Experience Jackson doing?
Oh, you know, we do a lot of stuff. You know, we're planning for 2018 right now. There's a lot of stuff coming up in 2018. And we, you know, focused on this past year and all of the great things that took place. We're here just to promote all of the assets. And one of the big assets that we have are museums. And I'm going to hand the microphone over to Jen to talk about Museum Day, which was a huge, huge success.
It was, or it's going to be?
Well, it was. So we had our first inaugural Museum Day in September, and there were 5,200. Think about this number. Over 5,200 people that walked through the doors of our museums on one single Saturday here in Jackson.
On one Saturday?
On one Saturday.
Impossible. 50,
yeah. Well, hey, I'm here to tell you, and the stats don't lie necessarily when they're given in trustworthy manners. So,
what'd you do that day?
I'm sorry?
What's that mean, Museum Day? What'd they do there?
Yeah, so there were 12 different museums that participated, and they opened their doors, and they ran tours and open house style meet and greets with punch and cookies on the lawn, all for free on the same day, so 10 to 4. But what we're really excited about is that when I say it's the first inaugural, it's going to happen again. And we're really excited that next year on September 15th, which is a Saturday, the museums have acquiesced of sorts and understood that there's this community demand for a Museum Day, and they're going to do it again. So we're super, super excited that you'll be able to go and discover a lot of the places that you might not have time to go through throughout the year, and you get to see some of the fabulous artifacts that our community holds.
So people came to see the museum. There wasn't any special showing that was in town or anything, any exhibit.
Correct. There wasn't a special highlight exhibit or anything of that nature. Really, the thing that made Museum Day super special is the number of families that came out. So the Waterloo Farm Museum, for example, they said that they were able to have 85 people go through in the same day. And for them, normally, a group size is 15. So having that many tours go through their historic home was absolutely just a fabulous win for them.
Well, that's great. We have a great museum in Jackson. Mm-hmm. I know we do, and they do a great job there. Mm-hmm. No question. So you've got, you know, here we come into the holiday season.
Correct.
Do you have a lot of things planned for the holiday season?
So that is a part of the reason that we're here. Yeah, so we want to shout from the rooftops. Jackson doesn't shut down just because the weather starts to get cold. So one of the things that a lot of people forget is that the outdoor assets that we have, like the Falling Waters Trail that Jessica was telling us about, that had all these photos taken of by Pier Michigan, that doesn't shut down just because it's going to be colder out. It transforms, all of the trails transforms into winter assets. So if you like snowshoeing or if you like to go cross-country skiing, there are places and homes to do that. And there's also a lot of really fun events. So if people like to get out and about, there is a really fun soul and funk concert that's going to be offered by the JSO here in downtown at the Wax on November 4th. And it's going to be the mainstays. And they're a little bit of a regional band out of Kalamazoo, so we have to give them some regional love. And so they're going to be coming out and playing in our community on the 4th of November. And then the Nightlights, of course, they're going to be opening at MIS this year. So it's just going to be a fabulous round of events this season.
Well, so they won't be downtown this year?
Correct. They've expanded. So they've expanded so that there's going to be over 3 miles of lights out at Michigan International Speedway. So they're still going to have the 5K run walk through the lights that's going to take place on the Wednesday before the Thanksgiving. And then on Thanksgiving, that's when all the cars get to go through the nightlights. So we encourage everybody to go check it out. It's going to be in the beautiful Irish Hills, which is part of Jackson. And you're going to be able to discover the beautiful lights down there.
So you guys are experienced Jackson. You work for the Convention and Tourist Bureau, and you're trying to draw people to Jackson.
Yes.
What draws people to Jackson the most, do you think?
Wine and beer.
Wine and
what? Wait. I'm sorry. Woo, what time is it? No. Well, that's one of them. That's one
break
of
out
them.
The beer.
Makes sense to
break
me.
Break out the beer. So that's one of the things. So Jackson is part of the Southeastern Pioneer Wine Trail. So it's the most southern wine trail in Michigan. There are 5 of those wineries that are here in the Jackson County area, and that really makes up the bulk of the trail. So we're the heart of that. So I say it a little cheeky because I thought it would be funny, but it's true. So between our history that we have at the with the prison museum and all of the Civil War history that we have throughout the community and things like the Underground Railroad, all the way to the wine and beer that we offer, there's a lot of things that people can enjoy in our community.
That makes the news tomorrow, Jennifer.
That everything. Makes the news.
Headlines.
Yeah.
That's the line of the year here.
I don't really, I really hope you don't soundbite it that way. But again, stats don't lie when they're given in trustworthy ways. Neither do soundbites when they're given in trustworthy ways, right?
Don't you like coming out to see the prison, the old prison and everything? Do they go into that or not? Cell block
7, right. Yeah. So on the active campus of the state prison, there is a museum that's run by Ella Sharp Museum, and that's called the Cell Block 7 Museum. So it's Michigan's prison museum. And one of the things that I love about it is that you get to understand the amount of humanity that our community has held by
incarcerating.
Well, I'm incarcerating. Well, no, I'm struggling. I'm struggling rehabilitating. Thank
rehabilitating.
You, Molly Bolton for the win. Rehabilitating.
We
there you go.
Start with you, Greg.
Yes.
Locking people up.
No. Ooh, you've taken it somewhere nasty, Greg. There you go. Rehabilitating.
Just the phrase here in the show.
There you go. Stats don't lie as long as they're given honestly. So rehabilitating people, and I always am really surprised at the amount of humanity that you see when you go through the building. Not that there are people that are incarcerated that you can see, but you really can feel a little bit about how it must have felt to be incarcerated when you go through.
Well, that's great, and I think you like your job, too.
Oh, I love
so,
it.
So as we're finishing up this segment, can you give us any last words of wisdom beyond beer and wine?
Get out and drink.
But drink safely.
That's a good one.
And go to experiencejackson.com to learn about all the fabulous ways that you can experience Jackson.
What? Say that again.
Go to experiencejackson.com to figure out all the ways that you can experience Jackson.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. It was good. You guys are great. Keep pushing
you.
Us. Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the Rotary Club here today.
That's Jackson Breakfast.
Jackson Breakfast
There's
Rotary.
There's two of us in town.
Okay, Jackson Breakfast Rotary. Mark Baker and Jim Sunday are members in good standing.
So thank you.
Kind of.
Standing together. Yeah, we're standing. I can't sit and talk. So my dad was a pastor, so I've got to be on my feet.
Tell us about Rotary, Mark.
Sure. Jackson Breakfast Rotary Club. We are a group of like-minded leaders that tackle issues locally and globally. We do not scare away from any huge or difficult issues. One of the things that Rotary has done internationally is taking on polio. So polio still exists in the world, and today it actually is World Polio Day. So if you go out and you just type in polio or Rotary, you're going to find a lot of websites that are talking about today, World Polio Day. We're trying to eradicate polio from the planet. So Rotary International has been, since about the 1980s, pushing to remove and eradicate polio.
So what do you guys do here locally?
Locally, we have a lot of involvement. We work a lot with Disability Connections, and we support them. We have supported Cascades Humane Society. We love going out to that the Paws in the Park, and we sell food there at the Paws in the Park, help raise money. We raised over $1,000 for Paws in the Park. We also give by service through Interfaith Shelter. And we've given to other nonprofits here in our community, like Salvation Army. We raised, just within the last month, we helped raise $1,000 to go for the hurricane relief, Harvey Hurricane Relief. And Salvation Army was appropriately, honestly moving those numbers, right, Jen? So, because we know that they're responsible with their money. But we have a lot of involvement here in the community as well. We get involved a lot with youth and healthcare. One of the things that we do with youth is junior achievement. We love to be involved in the schools. We are involved in junior achievement in the middle school at Parkside. And we also have an Interact Club. So an Interact Club is a club of Rotarians, but they're in the middle school. And we have a great partnership with Jackson Public Schools. It's neat that they're here with us today. And we have 135 students that are signing up just to say, I want to participate and help in a service project in our community. So Rotary International and Jackson Breakfast Rotary really are connecting with people.
So, Jim, why did you get in Rotary?
Been in Rotary since the 80s. Started down in Adrian at the Rotary Club down there to serve the community. Business connections. It's just a fun club. No matter what Rotary Club I've been to, just visited one at Birch Run that runs up there. So Rotary is community-minded. We give back everything we bring in. We don't keep any money at all, and we have fun doing it. We're a singing club. The Noon Club isn't a singing club. We always poke at them for that. But
are you going to sing today?
We did already.
You missed
it. I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed it,
that
too.
That means our studio audience
you
missed
it. You want to sing in the microphone, really?
Yeah. Absolutely. There you go. How's that? Man, I feel good.
I'm smiling. I'll tell you right now. I'm just smiling. I'll tell you right now. You guys have other jobs, too, right?
Yes, we have a regular job. So.
I guess I'll make sure.
Yes.
Thank God.
We like to start our day that way. Every Tuesday morning, we are meeting at Steve's Ranch, 7 a.m., and we invite anybody and everybody to just come and visit us. We want them to be able to just have breakfast with us. The breakfast is free when they come and visit us. It's a great way to connect with people. And we do have a fun time. We have a lot of enjoyment. We have support with each other. We're a family away from our own families.
Are you recruiting new members?
Always. Yep. Yeah, always. Rotary International is always trying to reach out to connect with other people. We believe that, you know, as we all support each other and work together, that these ideas are able to be tackled. Some of the things that we do globally as well is like water, helping get water in developing countries. And here locally, doing things like the Big Brothers and Big Sisters and Poets Among Us. And just so many different things. I mean, I could literally take all your hour just talking about all the different ways that Rotarians get involved. So, but to find us, you can go out to Facebook, of course. Jackson Breakfast Rotary for Facebook. Also, breakfastrotary.com. You hear that breakfast part, right? We're really trying to emphasize that we want to see 7 to 8, and we are done at 8 o'clock so that you can head to your job and be able to work. So
when do you meet? Once a month?
Every Tuesday. Every Tuesday at Steve's Ranch, 7 a.m. every Tuesday. So, and definitely we just like to have a lot of fun and get involved.
And you're on Facebook?
We're on Facebook, Jackson Breakfast Rotary. So, yep.
Okay. Anything else, Jim?
No, I think Mark covered most of it.
It sounds like it. Yep. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Thanks,
Jim. Thank you very much.
Jackson Breakfast Rotary every Tuesday at Steve's Ranch House.
7 a.m. I see him there. Next up, we have Jackson Public Schools, and we have the superintendent with us today, Jeff Beal. Welcome, Jeff.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Well, it's just Jackson Public. Anything going on there? You guys just kind of cruising along.
You know what? It's a great start to the school year, and we are working. We're in the middle of developing a bond proposal as we talk about a strategic plan for all of our facilities. So that's been something that's been ongoing, really, for more than a year now. But hot and heavy throughout the summer, and has really taken some shape right now.
Well, you know, I always say this when I have a superintendent on: if there's ever a job in the world that you probably don't want, it's probably that job. Right there, because I got to believe, you know, you got to please students, you got to please parents, you got to please teachers, you got to administrators, the general public, and God only knows who else is out there. So it's probably a tough day. Almost every day somebody's after you for something out there. So we appreciate what you do and all the superintendents do, because that's got to be a tough job, but, no doubt. But so I know you've got right now, you're talking about, you know, a lot of good things. I know there's the bond news and everything else you want to talk about, and you got a bond that's coming up, is that right now?
Well, we're looking, right now we've been exploring, and I anticipate that there'll be a vote in May of 2018. That's kind of the anticipation at this point. We've had a committee of about 90 citizens that have been really, they met every other week throughout the summer to take a look at a lot of data. The board engaged TMP Architecture to do a facility study, an audit, and a program assessment for us. A year ago, and so we've been kind of working through that data, and the Bond Development Committee, the BDC, has been kind of taking a look at that and really creating a strategic plan moving forward for what Jackson Public Schools should look like. How do we position ourselves, not live in what we have, but how we position ourselves for the next 25 years? A lot of folks don't realize that the average age of a facility in Jackson is 65 years old. And so when you take a look at what we've got, I make jokes that the classrooms that our kids are learning in, they're using the same desks that I was drawing on when I was in school myself. So, you know, and when we look at that, we need to really bring our schools into the 21st century. We've got a lot on the table. Headlining the bond, there's really two critical things that have come forward. Besides the number of facilities, we're going to have a conversation about the number of facilities, but safety and security at every one of our facilities. What's that handshake look like? What does that welcome center look like? How do we bring folks into our building and make certain that we have a safe educational environment for them when they're here? And then what does that educational environment look like? What does 21st century learning look like? Because a lot of it now is about critical thinking. It's about facilitating. It's about making certain that our students our center in the classroom, as opposed to a sit and get or a stand and deliver that we might have all been used to when we went to school.
Right. I mean, the district obviously has changed. I know when I went to school and came out of the public schools back in 1979. Is that when we graduated, Greg?
No.
There was probably, though, when we were in school, probably 10,000.
It was in the 60s.
Yeah, in the 60s. Yeah, something like that. There was probably 10,000 kids today, and I think you've got somewhere in the 5,000. That's got to be a real you know, change that you have. You got all these facilities and these old facilities and too many facilities. So what is it? Where are you at on all that?
Well, I've said this. We have 1 million square feet of classroom underneath roof right now. And we need to reduce that, because that kind of overhead, that kind of infrastructure is very difficult to maintain. But not just that, it's built, like you said, I think we're built for about 8,000 students. We've closed over 20 facilities in the last 40 years. And so, we have recently closed McCulloch Academy this year. That actually closed itself. They simply fell below a threshold where we could support the building with the number of students inside, and so those students were dispersed to other buildings within JPS. But we're going to have conversations. Again, if you take a look at a building like Cascades, Cascades was built, and it was built as a feeder elementary for Frost Middle School. Now they're both functioning as elementary schools. We would never have conceived of putting two elementary schools in the same parking lot. So, how do we take a look at writing some of the ship, if you will? How do we create a strategic plan moving forward for what the facility usage should be? Where should we have our buildings, and which buildings should we take offline? And that's always a complicated conversation.
Those buildings aren't easy to close, are they?
No, they're never easy to close. You know, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of passion wrapped up in them. There's a lot of history wrapped up in them. And we certainly want to make sure that we do it right. We want to make sure that we address it appropriately. But this is not about yesterday. I got to be very candid. This is about building for tomorrow and what those facilities and how those facilities can be used. Again, Frost is a perfect example. That middle school was never really built as an elementary school, and yet we've dragooned it into being an elementary school. And so now you end up with students who, we really need to reshape that building and that campus. And so as we look at what that can look like moving forward, how do we create a two-campus setup where you've got on one location, where you still are serving the needs of lower elementary kids, because kindergartners, I promise you, do not look like fifth graders. You know, so how do we create that setup that works for lower elementary and upper elementary?
Right. Jeff, you had three big community meetings. What was your assessment of what you gained out of those?
I couldn't be more pleased with the turnout from our community forums. We saw a lot of input, and we're narrowing down on a decision. Again, I think we had roughly 90 folks at the last one at Parkside, and probably 50 at each of the session ones that were at the high school. Session ones were a lot more sit and get. Session ones were a lot more let us show you what the data says, let us show you that data and kind of what the study from TMP looked like. And session two, our folks got to put their hands on it and manipulate it and start to talk about where their values were and where they wanted to see the district move and in which directions. And that's actually going to culminate. We have one last bond development committee meeting coming up on the 30th, so next Monday. Is going to be the last bond development committee, and so I'd invite folks to come and participate with that. That's at Jackson High School, and what we'll do there is we're going to articulate what that bond development committee is going to take to the board. So the timeline on this is it's not a Jeff Beal project. It really is a community-driven project, and the timeline is that this bond development committee is going to go to the board and present their findings and their ask, and then the board will take up that action. And then direct me to go to Treasury and get the ball rolling with the ballot language and the whole nine yards.
Right. Well, still, it's got to be tough because, I went to Cascades. I want you to close Cascades. Of course, I don't want you to close Cascades, and that's the feeling everybody has. I live 500 yards from there on Thompson Street, walked down there, went to Frost, and it's kind of a nice setup. But you understand that. But I guess the biggest concern, is these kids that are all of a sudden the trauma they go through when you change the school, it's a big deal.
And some of the things, so Cascades serves a K-2 population currently. And keep in mind that this doesn't happen overnight, that if the bond passes, when the bond passes, what you end up with is a remodel or a revamp, and I'm not sure exactly which direction the bond development committee is going to take us. But that'll be a strategic move that would take multiple years as new construction or as the remodel comes online, how that would take place. So the K-2 students that would be in Cascades today wouldn't necessarily be those students who would be affected as the transition were to take place.
All right, we'll pick this up. We're going to come back on with JPS after the break here. So we'll be back and we'll continue with some more of those questions we have. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Break for the news. We'll be right back at 970-1015 FM.
We now return to Good Morning Greater Jackson. Once again, your hosts, Greg O'Connor and Rick Walton.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. We're going to start right out again with Jackson Public. We've got Jeff Beal talking about what's going on there. I think it's meaningful for all of us. You know, Jeff, I guess one of the questions I always have is when you close these schools and you transfer these kids in middle of the year, again, that's got to be kind of a traumatic thing for those kids. And what do you do to really reach out to these kids to make sure when they come in to the new school? I mean, do you transfer the teachers? What do you do? How do you get those kids so they feel okay? That's a big deal, I'm sure.
Well, that's spot on. So the board this year was these were not a fun conversation. You know, closing a school is not. Those are difficult decisions. But the board was very concerned that we do this correctly. And so there's a handshake, a handoff between buildings. And so our building principals from our other elementaries reached out and touched base with parents from McCulloch. It's a lot nicer. It's got a better feel to be invited. And so you saw events within the school. So come out and have lunch in our building or come over and have breakfast in our building. Come tour our facility. And the principals reached out and touched the parents and said, hey, I am super excited to have your child coming to my school. What can I do? Let me tell you about the initiatives we've got going on. Let me tell you how you can get involved or how we're going to be involved for you. And so you see a lot of those supports come into play. And then Julie Baker, who is the principal now over at the Montessori Center, but she was also the principal at McCulloch. My hat goes off to her and her entire teaching staff, her crew. They did a great job at working with parents. You know, I went out and we had a couple of meetings at McCulloch. The board met at McCulloch to take the input and have a conversation with the community. I went out and spoke to parents in the morning and then again at the end of the day so that we could help to kind of meet the needs of each individual student. And so it wasn't about, gosh, we're moving an entire building and so, but it was about how do we meet the needs of each individual child.
That's great. That's great. Now, you say something about a learning environment, 20th century learning. What's that all about?
Well, again, a lot of what we're doing is we need to retool kind of public education a little bit. And this is I said this to the Bond Development Committee. It is exciting to live in these times. We get to actually have a hand in reshaping what education looks like. So if you think about what we're moving towards now, we were for a long time a very industrialized model, you go through 12th grade and you graduate and some go into the workforce and some go into college. We are now thinking much broader than that. We are thinking of preschool through 16. We are thinking not just in college but into CTE, into valuable credentials or into apprenticeships or into skilled trades. We are much more dynamic about thinking about our students from the classroom to the workforce. So really from classroom to career is kind of our goal, and it's really the core mission of Jackson Public Schools. And it's been one of the things that has really changed and really continues to change and drive our decision making.
You still have to take Algebra 2 to graduate?
We do still have to take Algebra 2. That's a Michigan merit curriculum requirement. So yes, you still have to take Algebra 2 to graduate.
Of course, I like to get up on my political podium here because I really look at it, you know, and I look at what I do and Greg does and most everybody does. And if I can read, if I can comprehend, if I can write, if I can do some arithmetic math, you know, to some degree, if you can teach me how to study, solve problems, and communicate some, put that in my head, I probably 80% of us can probably function pretty well in this world, you know, out there. And it's just, you know, if you want to be a rocket scientist, I'm all for it, and we ought to have those classes for those kids and everything else out there. But some way, we got to catch those kids before they don't want to learn, I think, at kindergarten and before kindergarten, instill that into them, and all of a sudden, then they get out in the world, they can function, you know, they can function well. But I don't know. Someday I want to be superintendent for 2 days. Is all.
Well, you're spot on, and that's one of the things that we're really working at. When we talk to employers, when we talk to folks out in the business world, and we are generating more and more partnerships all the time. When we're out there, a couple of the things that they're asking for, that they're begging for, are, can we get our students to communicate? And that interpersonal communication, you know, it's a challenge now because our children live where? They live in their phones. They live in social media. And how do we get them to have interpersonal communications? And so that's a big one that we hear from our employers, and it's one of those soft skills, if you will, or critical skills that we're embedding into our curriculum. And then the other one is that critical thinking, that ability to problem solve and reason beyond. So it's not just taking the material and regurgitating it and spitting it back out in a memorization type of a test. It's being able to take that information and transform it into something new, or take that information and be able to apply it to a problem that we might not normally think of in context.
Yeah, we won't solve it today, but I'm going to call you. You've got coffee with you. I mean, I really think that's cool. Coffee with the superintendent, or coffee with Jeff Beal, whatever you call it. You can, what's that all about?
Well, it's another way. So a lot of times when we're in the school system, you know, we get tied up in the run of the day. I tell the employees it's like a roller coaster ride. We are racing from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And so I need a break. I need the ability to have a pause and be able to sit down with our community, with our constituents, our stakeholders, and be able to talk about anything education. We got a couple of those dates coming up. We've had a few of them so far. Coming up on Thursday, November 9th from 9 to 10 a.m. at Hunt, and then at Sharp Park in December, December 19th, so almost to Christmas. That'd be from 8:45 to 9:45. And what it is folks come in, we sit down, we have a cup of coffee, and I usually talk a little bit about the state of the district, and then the conversation becomes very organic after that. It's literally whatever anybody wants to talk about. It's all fair game. It's all on the table, and I try to have one-on-one conversations with everybody who shows up. And so it's a good chance for the stakeholders, for people who might not necessarily interact with me, to be able to sit down and get a feel for the personality of the district or what's going on in the district. And at the same time, it's a great sounding board so that I can get the pulse of the community and be able to lead the district, not just for, again, the way Jeff Beal wants it to go, but where does Jackson want it to go?
You know, every once in a while you hear this, and not trying to put you on the spot as such, every once in a while you hear about a child who graduates from high school or is in 10th grade or 9th grade and they can't read. I mean, you hear about, I'm not saying about Jackson Public, but you hear that in general out there. Is that possible? Is that possible that it could happen in our public schools?
I would tell you that it is possible.
It is possible.
And it's not just possible at Jackson. This is a critical concern across the entire country. So one of the pieces, the legislation that we're all kind of wrapped around is we call it the third grade reading law. This is a new legislation that was implemented. And Jackson Public Schools is committed to making certain that every student can read at grade level by third grade. And so you're seeing a lot of specific strategies come in, a lot of communications with parents. Each student below grade level in Jackson Public Schools has an individual reading plan that's developed, that we sit down and talk with the parents. We walk through strategies that they can apply at home. We walk through very specific strategies within our school system. So there's a lot going on, and we're working to address those very critical needs.
Okay. We got to cut this short, but I think it's time for Jackson, Michigan, the county, that's not to be acceptable, because it's not acceptable in my life. If it was my child or my grandchild or something like that, I have the ability to step up and do that. It's just not acceptable. So I hear it. I know you're doing everything you can. That's not a criticism at all. Really appreciate where you're at. You're in a school district with declining enrollment, less money, too many facilities, and you're supposed to, you know, meet everybody's needs out there, and that's tough. That really is tough.
But I don't want to leave it on that. One of the things, so when I came to the district, you know, there's a lot moving in Jackson Public Schools, and the community should know this. When I came to Jackson Public Schools, my first year here in 2014, we lost 360 kids. And that's a fire sale, folks. That's a chance of going out of business, because if you lose 360 kids a year, pretty soon you have no students. My second year here, we lost 280 kids. That was, a tough way to balance a budget. Last year, we lost just over 120 students. I think our numbers on count day were about 150, but we're a little better than that right now as count comes in. And so we're going to be, I think, under that 120 mark. So, again, while we are declining district, the entire state of Michigan is losing about 12% of their student population, and Jackson Public Schools looks a lot like that. But we're getting a lot better. Programs like our Jackson Pathways with Rob Obita is really taking off. Our South Central Michigan virtual program has tripled the enrollment out there, and we're serving students not just in Jackson but around the county and including some of our neighboring counties. The Montessori Center, which is a partnership with the Felician Sisters, has come in, and they've generated students from, again, around the county. That's been a draw for folks who are looking for that Montessori education, and we continue to pack that facility. And then the other thing, from an academic standpoint, when I got here, we had priority schools, all across the district. And in the last 3 years, we've eliminated every priority and every focus school in Jackson Public Schools. We are making the difference. We are moving that bar. And it's moving a mountain, and we do it literally one stone at a time, one child at a time. But I think you're seeing a lot of really good things.
You guys are doing a great job at that, and I think that's what the conclusion is to be. We've got to support the schools. Our greatest asset, our greatest resource we have is those children, and we've got to support you guys in the tough job you have. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
From United Way of Jackson, Lois Dunning and Beth Schaefer. Lois is the Energizing Education Manager. Beth is the Director of Resource Development. Lois, tell us about Energizing Education.
All right. Well, thank you. Energizing Education. First of all, we believe energized education is essential to building a successful life free from poverty. Reading proficiency is essential to that learning. Energizing Education uses volunteer adult mentors to come and read with children who are not reading at grade level in elementary schools to improve their reading skills. And last year, 94% of the kids in our program increased their reading level by at least one level. And of those kids, 56% of the kids that were in Energizing Education reached grade level by the time they exited out of the program. So we're making a big difference on moving that reading level with early elementary age students. But I want to introduce to you one of our mentors to give you a real personal impact about how we're working in the classroom. This is Kurt Schneider.
Thanks. Well, first of all, I'm a former JPS teacher.
Long time,
23 years at the middle school at Parkside, teaching English in eighth grade English. And but my point is that to be a mentor in the Energizing Education program, you don't have to have that kind of background, not at all. All you got to do is care. So I encourage you to sign up. I'll walk you through this afternoon. I will go to Northwest Elementary. I'll check in at the front desk. I'll go to the EE room, there's an appointed room in every school. Is that right? Yep. Every school has a room that is really nicely appointed with a person in there all the time to run the show. And I meet with two kids. You can choose to meet with just one kid a week, but it's twice a week, half an hour. And EE sets it all up for you. You don't have to worry about prepping. You just show up, and they give you kind of a little menu to follow with a kid. And these children are not way behind. They're just slightly below the level they need to be. And then your job is just encourage them and help them and nurture them to the point where they get at their level or quite often way beyond. Throughout the school year. So you get a personal relationship with the kid over the year. It's really kind of fun. And they know all about my dog, Pete the Wild Poodle. And I know all about their pets and their brothers and sisters and what they've been doing. And really, and even if the kid doesn't grow up to be a little Shakespeare, the fact that you're there shows that you care, and it's really important to a lot of these kids that somebody's there to care about them. And it's like that starfish story. You know, you see a guy walking down the beach, and he sees thousands of starfish on the beach that were tossed there by a storm, and one man is throwing starfish back in the sea, and he says, "Yeah, what's the point? You can't save all these starfish. What does it matter?" And the guy picks up one starfish and looks at it and says, "Well, it matters to this one." And he tosses it back. Thanks.
Thanks, Kurt. And Energizing Education is a simple but powerful example of how your dollars donated to United Way make a big lifelong impact. And it segues so beautifully with what Jeff is talking to us about, what's going on in our Jackson schools, but what EE is in schools all over Jackson County. And your support means that we can support these programs and leverage other sources to fund programs like EE. So if we don't get these kids able to learn, and they have a much bigger risk of dropping out of school and ending up in poverty. And the United Way is focusing on every driver of poverty because our goal is to help Jackson County residents develop pathways to financial stability. So kids who don't learn to read can't read to learn, therefore they can't graduate from high school and make a difference. So we realize that the future of these kids begins at second grade, where they're really, they have to be reading to learn. So we want your help. We want your help as far as donating dollars. We want your help as far as doing what Kurt is saying, caring enough to come and sit with the child a few times a week and showing that you want to make a difference in our community. And you can do this by going to uwjackson.org and clicking on the Donate Now button. And if you have the time, please get in touch with us at 784-0511, and you can become an Energizing Education mentor as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Swartzlander.
Good morning. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Rick, and the News Talk 970 team. Good morning, and thank you, everybody, for coming out to Good Morning Greater Jackson. We're broadcasting live from Bella Notte here in downtown Jackson with a full house of chamber members. First of all, thank you to our sponsors this morning, United Way, Jackson Public Schools, Experience Jackson, and the entire Jackson Breakfast Rotary Club. So thank you. If you are just turning in, you can listen to the podcast on WKHM.com, clicking on the audio archive link. I'd also like to extend a big thank you to our ambassadors this morning, sponsored by Flagstar Bank, Tammy Ferguson of Comerica Bank, and Deanna Light of Securian Financial Advisors of the Great Lakes. Our new members from the past month: HealthQuest of Jackson, Transportation Audit and Recovery Services, Diverse Staffing, Fuller Imagery, Halo Branded Solutions, 308 Brass Rail, Frank Center of the Arts, Kennedy Painting, Dr. Martin's Foot and Ankle Clinic, Stop One Insurance Agency, Fifth Third Bank on East Michigan Ave, All American Security, Handyman Stan, and Matrix Tool and Engineering. Round of applause for them. We have some few great events coming up over the next month. In this November 6th, 7th, and 8th, we have our Challenge Day program. We're still looking for adult facilitators, so if you're interested in that, contact the Chamber office. November 17th is our Legislative Rise and Shine. That will be with Jackson County. November 28th, right back here for our next Good Morning Greater Jackson, and November 30th for our Brew at the Board. Joining us this morning is Adeco Employment, Angel of Mine Home Care, Belltone Hearing, CP Federal Credit Union, Cascades Manor House, Cleary University, Exit Realty First, Handyman Stan, Integro, Jackson Candy and Fudge Factory, Jackson District Library, Jackson Publishing Company, Jackson Symphony Orchestra, Legal Shield, Northwest Community Schools, Tomco Asphalt, Barrett Insurance, LTI Printing, Alzheimer's Association, Transportation Audit and Recovery Services, Edward Jones, Molly Bolton, The Balloony Bin, Diverse Staffing, and New York Life. At a very full house this morning at Good Morning Greater Jackson. Thank you, everybody, for starting your day with us. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thanks.